The scripture reading tonight comes from Luke chapter 24, verses 13 to 35. And you have a pew Bible in front of you, and that will be, if you want to read along, it's found on page 1061. This is the passage of, it's called On the Road to Emmaus. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but they didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going further. But they urged him strongly, 'Stay with us, for it is nearly evening, the day is almost over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?' They got up, returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, 'It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon.' Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread." This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. It's lovely to be here this evening. It's particularly nice to be here on a baptism evening as well. What a great celebration. I recognize a lot of faces as I look out, and some of you might recognize me. But for those of you who don't, my name's Ben. I grew up in this church. In fact, I tried to figure out, I think it was about 13 and a half years ago that I myself got baptized here in that very pool. And it's just a great celebration declaration of faith that we've seen today. Today's passage is the story of the travelers of the road to Emmaus. It is one of the most loved resurrection passages found in the Bible. In fact, just last week I was chatting to one of my brothers about this passage, and he said that it's not just his favorite resurrection passage, but in fact his favorite passage in the whole of the Bible. Unfortunately, another friend of ours then came along and started asking him questions about his new job and where he lives in Oxford. And I didn't get to unpack with him why it was his favourite passage. But I've been thinking this week as I was preparing, and I think that this is such a well-loved resurrection passage because it shows us something really powerful in the faith of in our faith and in Christianity. It shows us both what life looks like without the resurrection and what life looks like because of the resurrection. There are hundreds of religions around the world, and most of them are built on teachings of their founder or some form of philosophical thought. A few are built around real historical people: Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and Buddhism. But only one of them makes this claim, that its founder didn't stay dead. Only Christianity claims a founder who has overcome death and was raised to life again. And that's why we have hope as Christians, and that's why we gather here today. The passage starts with two people walking from Jerusalem to a nearby settlement called Emmaus. In the text, we see it's about 7 miles from Jerusalem. This is about a two-hour walk. We find out that one of those travelers was named Cleopas, but the other remains unnamed. Perhaps it was a husband and wife walking home after the events of the weekend. We have such a detailed account. Perhaps it was Luke himself, maybe walking home with his friend Cleopas. No one's quite sure who the two of them are, but we do know that they must have been close to Jesus. They must have been close to the 12 disciples. Not part of the 12, but likely those next circle out, maybe one of the 70. They knew where to find the disciples in their safe hiding space. We see at the end of the passage when they go back to Jerusalem to tell them that they've seen Jesus alive. They probably would have spent a long time traveling with Jesus, spending time with the disciples, giving up parts of their old life to follow him. In verse 13, we see that they are making this walk on the very day of the resurrection itself, which firmly links this account with all the other happenings of that day and of 3 days before and of the week leading up to it. Luke doesn't define the subject of their conversation, but we do know that they were sad and disheartened. And when he says that they were just discussing all these things, it's likely that they were discussing Jesus' entry into Jerusalem, leading up to his death and resurrection, and then the strange reports they'd had that morning. I tried to picture what their walk might have looked like. Some scholars compare it to conversations or a walk home after a funeral. Fortunately, I've not been to too many funerals myself. But including yesterday, I have been to a lot of Cholton defeats. And I imagine it's similar to the walk home that I've had at least 3 times in the last 4 weeks, with my head down, discussing what I've just seen with my uncle. The game started so well. And then the new tactics, that looked great too. But then we gave away the ball. And have we done enough now to stay up? When's that next point? Do we still have hope in the team that we see in front of us? Perhaps it was similar. They were discussing Jesus' entry into Jerusalem. Oh, how amazing it was when he came in. And then he turned up at the temple, and there was something so different about the way that he went around talking this week. But then, why did Judas betray him? What happened with his arrest and crucifixion? And they definitely would have been discussing the empty tomb and the reports of angels and Jesus being alive, but no one being able to see it and confirm it. Here they were at the lowest point of their lives. They'd had certain expectations about who Jesus was and who this person should have been. They were expecting a conquering Christ, but instead they'd just seen a crucified Christ. They were expecting the Lion of Judah, but what they had just witnessed but could not yet understand was a sacrificial lamb. I know if I was one of them on that walk to Emmaus, I would have felt abandoned by God. Without Jesus, these two were lost. They could have walked and talked for days and never got rid of their disappointment, because they lacked the key understanding that unlocks the whole of the Old Testament and what they just witnessed in the week before, that the Messiah must suffer and die before entering his glory. Without the resurrection, Christianity is nothing. Without last Sunday and the celebration and the Easter eggs, this picture here of these two sad travelers would be us, lost without Christ. If I'm to paraphrase Paul from 1 Corinthians 15 when talking about the resurrection and the importance of the resurrection, he says that without it, we of all people are most miserable. Fortunately for them, and fortunately for us, While they were having this conversation, Jesus drew near to them and found them. Now, it's important to understand that these two travelers were not looking for Jesus. He was the last person they expected to see. If they'd wanted to find Jesus, then after the news and the reports that morning that the women had found the tomb empty, seen angels, and it was reported that Jesus was alive, they would have stuck around in Jerusalem. They would have gone to look and see if they could find Jesus, or at least find where the body had gone to. But they were done. They'd given up, and they were heading in completely the wrong way. I don't know how many of you are good with directions. I often pride myself at being quite good at being able to find my way around places and follow a map and Google Maps in particular. But about 3 or 4 months ago, a few of my friends from university decided that they wanted to do, it's going to sound really cool, a fossil hunting trip up in Whitby. I didn't want to miss out on all that excitement, so I went too. And ended up that Ellie and I collected our mates in London and then drove them up, and we were going to stay at a friend's granddad's house up in York on the way to break up the journey. About halfway up, Ellie did the first half of the driving. Halfway up, we stopped off for some food and switched drivers. And I got in, set up the sat-nav, carried on driving for an hour and a half. And when we were 10 minutes away from the destination, my friend in the back just popped his head forward and went, I don't think we're 10 minutes away from my granddad's house. He doesn't live anywhere near a motorway. And at that moment, I realized that we'd put in the right road name, but the wrong city. And we'd ended up on the west side of Manchester. So we'd end up in the northwest instead of the northeast, and added an extra 2 hours onto the journey. We see here, while these travelers are heading in the wrong direction, Jesus comes to them, enters into their conversation, and then points them back in the right direction. To me, the strange thing here is not that Jesus comes alongside them, but it's that they don't recognize him. In fact, they even think he's a stranger. Now, Luke tells us that this isn't their fault that they don't recognize him, but that, in fact, they were kept from recognizing him. But that just leads to the question of why? Why did God not let them see that it was Jesus standing in front of them? I think there are two reasons for this. First of all, by not knowing it was Jesus in front of them, it allowed them to open up better. He came up to them and asked some questions. He wanted to draw out their true thoughts. He wanted them to be honest with him. He wanted to know their thinking, their feeling. He wanted to read what was in their hearts. If he'd revealed himself straight away, yes, it would have answered their concerns and their worries, but they would have been overjoyed. Imagine if you thought that Jesus was dead and there he is in front of you and asked, oh, what were you talking about? Why were you worried? There's no way they would have answered truthfully and told him what they'd been discussing. Jesus wanted to get to the root of their disappointment. We even see this in the way that he questions them. He asks them once, what are you discussing? They respond saying, don't you know what's happened? Are you the only person who doesn't know what's happened in Jerusalem? Quite ironically, he replies saying, what things? Of course he knew what had happened. He was the center of what has happened. He was the guy. But he wanted to reveal what was really going on in their hearts. And when they answer his second question, it reveals the problem that they were struggling with. It shows how fragile their hopes had become. They say they were discussing Jesus of Nazareth and how he was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people, but how the chief priests and rulers had handed him over and he'd been crucified, how they had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel, but it had been 3 days since this took place, and then there were strange reports that morning and they couldn't make sense of what was going on. The first thing to note in their answers is that it's all in the past tense. When the stone was rolled across Jesus' tomb, their hopes in him had died too. But not only had they given up their hopes of who Jesus was, their very understanding of who he was had shrunk over the last 3 days. They say he was a prophet, yet they were hoping he was the one to redeem Israel. At some point, they must have started to think maybe he was more than a prophet, maybe there was more to come from this Jesus guy. But over those 3 days, their perception of him had become limited. He had shrunk to just being a prophet, no longer any hope in redemption. But just as my friend stuck his head out the back and corrected me when I was lost in the road, Jesus corrects their misunderstanding and starts to point them back in the right direction. He says to them, "How foolish you are." Although if you read the translations, that probably sounds a bit harsher than it is really. I like to think he said, "You silly billies." But how foolish you are, slow to believe in all the prophets have spoken. Did the Messiah not have to suffer these things and enter into his glory? And then beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them and said in all the scriptures concerning himself. The problem was that they had not accepted all that was written. They had accepted bits of it. They had this idea of who a Messiah should be, who should redeem them, how they should be set free from Rome. They'd believed some of the prophecies of Jesus, but not all of them. And Jesus takes them through the scriptures and shows them that this was always the plan. It would have been amazing, I think, to have heard that. I'm not sure what scriptures he looked at in particular. There's over 300 prophecies that point towards Jesus. But he makes it clear to them that the Messiah had to suffer before entering his glory. And Jesus' response to their answers helps us understand the other reason, the second reason, I think, he didn't reveal himself straight away. He wanted to start to reveal himself differently to those who had followed him. He wanted to transform them from belief based on seeing to a belief based on listening and knowing his word. He didn't want them to recognize him by sight anymore, but by word. He was leaving, and he knew that he was going to ascend to heaven in not much time. And he was building foundations of a different way of revealing himself to those who'd followed him and those of generations to follow them. Not by sight, but by word, by hearing and listening, by conversations. I think this is still relevant to us today. I know recently I've been having thoughts about work and whether I just stay at work, and then discussions about rent being, our contracts on our rent expiring, and what do we want to do. And often when I have these conversations, Ellie's my sounding board. But I often say, oh, wouldn't it be great if Jesus could just show me the way, if someone could just come up off the street and say, no, you should stick at your job, or no, you should move to this company. But then the next time I was in a situation or trouble in my life, or I had an issue with friends, I'd expect the same thing. I'd need the same thing. I'd need someone to point me in the right direction again. I'd need a sign to believe. But just like for these early followers, that only works short term. Our hope can become fragile like them. If we pause here for a second, we can see the bigger picture of what Jesus is doing in this journey with the two travelers. They weren't searching, yet Jesus came to them. They didn't understand, yet Jesus explained. They were lost, and Jesus found them. And as he teaches them based on his word, something in them begins to change. In verse 28, it goes on to say, as they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he was going further. But they urged him strongly to say, stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over. He then goes in with them, sits at a table, takes bread, gives thanks. And as he breaks it and gives it to them, they suddenly recognize who he is, and then he's gone. But the key moment in this for me is verse 28. They ask him to step into the house with them. Some translations put it as asking him to abide with them, dwell with them. When they invite him in and you see that Jesus was going to carry on going, it's not some kind of play acting that Jesus was doing. He wasn't being a polite Brit pretending that he didn't want a cup of tea, but actually he did want you to offer a cup of tea. He would have carried on walking had they not asked him in. Jesus does not force himself on anyone. He may have found them, he may have found us, but we have to make the most of the opportunity offered to us. In fact, this is exactly what we saw here today with the baptisms. Those being baptized weren't just going through a ceremony, they were responding. They know it's not about being perfect or about having everything figured out, but it's them saying, Jesus, stay with me. In the same way that these two invited Jesus in, they're saying, yes, come in, stay with me, I'm following you. And when that happens, when Jesus is welcomed in, everything begins to change. When they grasp that opportunity, their lives become transformed. When Jesus breaks the bread and their eyes are opened, and then he just vanishes, they aren't worried, concerned, or sad. Notice that the change, the biggest change for them, had already begun. They say to one another, were our hearts not burning within us? It might sound a bit strange, that passage, to some people, but it should be something that we can actually relate to, whether you're a Christian or not. We often talk about people in love having their hearts burning in desire and being on fire for someone else. And when someone falls out of love or they don't show love, they'll say that, oh, they've got a cold heart or their heart has turned to stone. It's that same kind of burning and passion idea that's being pulled out here. But what are their hearts burning from? Was it from Jesus, from them asking Jesus questions on the road? No. Did they say their hearts burned when Jesus looked at them and gave them a nice smile? No. It was from listening to him and when he opened the scriptures up and they were transformed by his word. And this is great news for us. We can hear him talking to us right here through our Bibles. In fact, underneath our bums are the same scriptures and words that Jesus would have spoken to those two travelers about. But it's also so much better for us. We have the Holy Spirit within us. They had to physically meet with Jesus on the road to hear God speaking to them. But as Christians, we have God dwelling in us, able to talk and communicate with us all the time, nudging us back on track, challenging us, showing us the right path. And we see in these travelers what a life alive in Jesus looks like. When their eyes are opened, when they've been lost and then found, there's an immediate action. They get up at once and return to Jerusalem. Everything that mattered before, no longer matters in the same way. A moment ago, it was too late to keep traveling. Now they're starting straight back. You know, it's likely that they didn't even finish their food. It says they got up at once and left. The arguments they'd used to make Jesus stay mattered no more. There had been a shift in their priorities. And not only had their priorities changed and do they feel alive, they can't keep it to themselves. They have to go and tell the others. It's true, the Lord is risen. They want to encourage everyone around them of what's going on. And this is the type of transformation that we can also see in our lives. For some of us here today, this starts with us taking the opportunity that God's offering to us. Just like the two on the road, he has found you, but you need to open up and let him in. We'll have some sung worship after this. Maybe in that time, you just want to say a little prayer and say, Jesus, I'm open, I'm ready. If that is the case, if that does happen to you, I'm sure Eddie will be happy to speak to you or I'll speak to you after. I'd love to catch up with you. For others of us here, we want to be like the travelers when they feel alive. They could not stay where they were. They could not keep it to themselves. They had to get up and go straight back. And the same is true for us. I think there's a challenge here this week to tell someone at work, tell someone at school, someone at home about church this weekend, how you saw baptisms, what that means for you. But as I end, let me just leave it on this last point. It's not just about going and spreading the word of Jesus to non-believers. Notice that they went to the other disciples. They built each other up. They shared what God had done with them. They shared the good news in their life. So let's do the same this week. Let's do the same this evening. When we finish, let's speak to one another. Let's encourage each other. Let's tell each other stories about how God has moved in our lives. Let's build each other up. And most importantly, let's remind each other of what is true. Thank you.